Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I hate to bother you guys before the ep. In fact, I'm kind of embarrassed by it, but to be totally frank, it's a request. So at the end of every episode, we talk about Patreon, and I've been making it seem like a throwaway addition, but it is not. To be totally frank with you guys, this show takes a ton of time, a ton of our resources, and it is our Patreon supporters who allow us to do that with our normal day. So if you've been listening to this show for a while, if you even like it a bit, please help us out. Hop onto Patreon, search out Warriors Huddle, and for as little as like $1 a month, you will be helping this show survive. And even more than that, we promise to supply you guys with as much extra content that we possibly can. If you do it, phenomenal. Thank you. If not, don't worry about it. We appreciate your time, but I hadn't been honest with you, and I wanted to spend some time before this ep to come completely clean.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, with me per usual, my producer, Marcus.
What's up, Dev Nation?
And my master of all things sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
What's going on? And gentlemen, as you both know, I am fired up to announce rejoining us after a couple weeks, the Golden State beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, a man who covers every single Warriors practice, press conference, shoot around, end game, Mr. Connor Letourneau.
Good to be here. Good to be back.
I was getting all fired up to say the whole, what's up, Connor? It's kind of like my go-to thing, and you immediately cut me off.
I mean, I'm just so excited to be here.
We have great chemistry normally. I almost want to reset it. I was distracted because Marcus is God knows where on the phone. This whole thing is setting off weird. But nonetheless, I am happy to have everybody here, and let me first bring the audience in. We are doing this in the friendly confines of my home. We're not in our garage, shockingly enough. We've got a new family room that we're sitting in. And behind me, kind of want to point out this thing over here on the wall that is called a picture. I don't want you to get surprised by it or confused. I know you prefer kind of the dorm room look at your house, but some people do, in fact, put those up on the wall. So don't get distracted.
Some people actually live at their houses, I hear. That's a thing too, right?
That also happens. And Marcus, if you could somehow make sure to recreate the echoey bathroom sound that you had when we were on the phone about 30 seconds ago, that'd be fantastic too.
Yeah, I'm on my way to the sauna right now, so I'll bring that up.
Listeners everywhere couldn't be more fired up, but I am burying the lead. Gentlemen, we are finally in a series that we have been waiting for all year, a series many have billed as the probable finals, at least the Western Conference Finals, Warriors-Houston. So I want to jump into my favorite segment, and it's the Off the Court Report. The concept of the Off the Court Report is remarkably simple. If you care about the Warriors enough to listen to this podcast, you obviously watch every single game. You're certainly watching now. It's the playoffs. But what Connor has that we don't is eyes on this team off the court. He sees what they do during the practices. He gets into the locker rooms. He sees all these things. So during the Off the Court Report, what we do is I get the hell out of the way, cough up the mic, give it to Connor, and ask what he has seen off the court, outside of the lines, since the last time we've had a chance to pod with him. So, Connor, what do you got, man?
Yeah, so for this segment, I usually tell you guys something that no one is aware of that, you know, didn't appear on any video or didn't go viral. But today I want to talk about something that the average listener is probably very aware of, which was a couple weeks ago during a off day during the first round, Steve Kerr's media availability, the awkward interaction between him and Draymond Green. And I was lucky enough to be standing directly to Steve's left during this situation. And I actually thought of Bram when this was all going down. And I mean that sincerely, because Bram is really we've had a couple awkward interactions together in our friendship. And you like to narrate when there's an awkward interaction happening. And I really wanted there to be a narrator during this situation because it just really warranted it. But as you guys have seen the video, I can tell you it was 20,000 times awkwarder to be there in person.
You're prominently featured in the video, incidentally.
I know. I know. And
when I watched it,
did you see my face? I was like, I mean, the listener can't see my face, but I was so awkward. My mouth was wide. I was like, ah.
When I watched the video, I not only saw your face, I narrated the entire thing. So, I mean, it worked out perfectly for me, but I don't want to stand it. Go ahead. Tell them the story.
Right.
We have
right.
sound from it. So if tell them the story.
So when this happens all the time. This happens all the time with Steve where he'll sit down to do a media availability and the music will be playing because they love to play music really loud during practice. And then Steve will say to Ray Ritter, who's their PR guru, hey, can you turn that down? And then we'll start the availability just so I can hear everyone's questions. And that happens all the time. So when he did that day, no one thought twice about it. It was like, okay, let's just wait for the music to get turned down. And then Ray just shakes his head. And it's just like, I can't. Draymond doesn't want it down. And I don't think I've ever seen Ray say no. I mean, I work with Ray on a daily basis, and he's the ultimate yes man. Like, he's so accommodating and helpful and will do anything he can to fulfill a request. And for him to say no in a public setting to Steve Kerr was shocking to me. And you could see Steve Kerr's eyes where he was like, what? And then he kind of left it like, okay, well, I'm going to give you some time now to go actually do it. And then he answers a question, probably a minute goes by, and the music hasn't been lowered. And Steve's like, what's going on? And he gets up and he's like, Ray. And he's like, I can't. Draymond won't let me. And Draymond, meanwhile, is shooting on the nearest court. So, Bram, you're aware of this. It's where Steph and KD always shoot when media.
It's that court. So the one that is
court. We're it's talking, the closest court.
We're talking less than 10 feet away.
Yeah, literally less than 10 feet away.
I also know what that court is, just for the record.
Okay, good for you. That away. That's a lie, but whatever.
And Draymond doesn't even acknowledge this situation, but he saw the media. He knows how this works. He knew what was happening. I've had people tweet at me and say, Draymond, it was a misunderstanding. No, it was not a misunderstanding. Draymond knew what was happening. And so the most telling thing about it to me was, you know, when Ray again says, I can't turn it down, Draymond won't let me. Janie McCauley from AP says, jokingly, mm-hmm. you know, who's in charge here? Mm-hmm. And then you guys all saw
I sure did.
Steve's eyes. He was
certainly not me.
He's like, certainly, obviously not me. Yep. And then he finishes his press conference. And the way I knew for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that he was really pissed was at the end, you know, 10-minute availability. At the end of it, he says to everyone, I hope you enjoy the music now. And then straight-faced, blank stare, walks over to the stereo, puts in his earbuds, walks into the gymnasium, or the weight room, which is right next to the court. You can see it through a glass door. Walks in there, and Draymond's in there, and they walk right by each other, don't even make eye contact.
And don't say anything.
And it was, that to me was the most telling thing, because Steve jokes around a lot. You know, it's hard to tell sometimes how upset he is about things. But the fact that he brought it up unprompted afterward showed me that it was a real thing. And I know a lot of fans felt like we were blowing that out of proportion, but I led my story that day with it, and I basically said, this is an example of why this has been a hard season for the Warriors.
So that is
because his voice is not resonating.
That is a phenomenal story, and we're going to use it as a jumping off point. A couple of observations. One, who is it who asked who's in charge here?
Janie McCauley from AP.
Okay.
She won a Pulitzer.
So when I heard that, and I'm going to give you some background on my own social neurosis. When you said earlier that I will narrate a awkward moment, you're not wrong. I will do that. And the reason I do it is because I'm trying to suck the awkward out of the situation. You know what I mean? Like, I'll try to make a joke out of it so all of us can laugh, move on, and we are no longer feeling weird. And when I listened and when I watched that video and I listened to her say, who's in charge here? She was trying to do that, but it was the worst possible thing she could have said. Instead of taking the awkwardness out, it magnified it by a billion.
And in my mind, it was the best possible thing she could have said because it showed how real of a situation it was.
Sure, yeah, fair enough.
If not for that question, we might not fully know the extent of how
how much it bothered him. But what I love about it is it also is the perfect juxtaposition. It's the first question and the best question to kind of show the difference between where this team was 5 days ago and today, because when that happened was before Friday, before they closed out the Clippers series. Now we are on we're leading 2-0 against Houston. So let me set up the question like this. You and I have talked about the Warriors' complacency throughout the entire year. We have acknowledged this team's talent base. We know that they should be the most favored team in the history of favored teams in the NBA, right? But we've also said they tend to kind of tune out, and there's a disconnect in the locker room, and occasionally some of that disconnect comes from Draymond. So now that we're beyond that moment and on the other side of two Houston wins, is all that behind us? Do you think this team is now locked in and this locker room is cohesive again?
I think that they're locked in for this series. Honestly, I could see it being a situation where the Warriors win this series in 4 or 5 games and just show off how epically talented they are and look dominant. And then they go into the next series against the winner of Portland and Denver, and it goes like 7 games.
Yeah.
And people are seriously worried they're going to lose that series because they're just not as threatened by a Portland without Nurkic or Denver, who they defecated on during the regular season. And I think
we don't like the word shit here, so thank you for.
And the reality is the Rockets pose a real threat, and I think that's what the Warriors needed right now. And I also think the fact that they're coming off that first round series, where honestly I think they were a little embarrassed.
Yep.
You know, losing a 31 point lead to a Clippers team that was lucky to make the playoffs, going 6 games against a Clippers team who's arguably their best player is Lou Williams, who, you know, if he was on the Warriors, it'd be the 5th, 6th best player.
Yep.
So I think that those two things combined, the timing of this series with the fact that it is the Rockets, and the Rockets have made it so publicly apparent that they want to beat the Warriors, I think has made the Warriors ratchet up their intensity level. But one thing I want to remind people is I think people look at this team right now and they think all the problems have just gone away. But the way I would compare it to is you always have to think about situations, put yourself in their shoes or put them in your shoes. Like for you, if you have a big trial coming up, right? Everything else that's going on, any workplace dispute you have, any office friction you have going on, doesn't matter because you're so dialed in and zoned in on the task at hand because the stakes are so high that you don't even feel all that other stuff. And then when that trial ends, you go back to feeling all the drama and BS that you felt before.
Yep.
And I think that's the case with this Warriors team. Right now in this series, they're so locked in on winning that it's kind of blinders to everything else, but it doesn't mean it's gone. They're just not paying attention to it right now.
Let's say they have success through this series, right? To continue your analogy, I have a trial, but I'm successful in it. There's a chance that success is going to pave at least a couple months of goodwill with whoever I did it with. You know what I mean? Like, even if I had huge funk before I go into the trial, but we win it, I'm going to be happy. There's going to be some carryover good feelings. You know what I mean? So for this team, because of course, what I loved about your description of, let's call it Soundgate, was the end of it. It's the piece of the story we hadn't gotten. What we know for sure, at least from what you were able to watch, is that Draymond and Kerr weren't able to sit down and work this stuff out, right? So my question is success enough to work it out? You know, like they win this series and Draymond and Kerr never sit down, never talk about whatever it is they need to talk about. Does it just disappear? And obviously this is a guess, but you are such a good read of people. You know, it's one of the reasons I enjoy your friendship. Does this, will a win over the Rockets or a championship over whomever fix these issues?
No. And I know this might sound weird, but I've thought this for a while now. I don't think that whatever happens in these playoffs is going to change what happens this offseason. I think a lot of people look at this and they say, well, you know, if the Warriors win another title and Durant wins finals MVP, maybe that helps his chances of coming back. And I totally understand that logic. But I honestly think because of the unique situation the Warriors are in, where they're so epically more talented than every team they face, where it's anything other than a championship would be a massive disappointment. Winning a championship would be great, but it's just kind of accomplishing what you should be accomplishing. It's not as high of a high as it would be for any other team. And I honestly think that Durant's gone regardless of whether they win a title. I think there's a good chance Draymond's traded regardless of how he does the rest of the playoffs, which might sound crazy because he's looked amazing in these playoffs. But, you know, the Warriors are smart enough not to make a decision solely based off a 2-month sample size.
So
a lot of the hay is in the barn, so to speak.
Here's where I get to be blissfully ignorant. Ready? This is me just as a Warriors fan. I don't care. I'm going to deal with that next year. I'm putting my head deep into the ostrich playoff sound.
You should. As a fan, you should do that.
They are.
You got to enjoy life.
I mean, even as an intelligent fan, even as somebody who recognizes perhaps we'll never see this again, it is for that reason why we just need to sit back and allow this to wash over us. If it never happens again, and I spend this year thinking about it's never going to happen again, as opposed to this is amazing, then I have wasted the final year or something that is unbelievable.
And I think it's good to have at least a base level awareness in the back of your mind that I might not have this game, because I do think there's been a little bit of a sense of people taking this dynasty for granted. And the reality is, as soon as next season, they're not going to be the favorites anymore. And so this might be the last title in a long time.
Dude, the favorites, they used to not be guaranteed to win 20 wins. This team used to, like, the only day I cared about at all in April or June was the draft. You know, so yes, dude, soak this up, because things can change immediately. And in that vein, let's start soaking up every moment of this. Let's jump in to the Houston series. What I've done is I put together a bunch of questions. We're going to be veering left and right, back and forth, many of which focus on this year. And here's my first. Steph, even though we're coming off a great win, we're not going to play again until Saturday, suffered an injury yesterday, which was kind of scandalous for me, by the way. I watched the game on tape delay. I was about an hour out, and on Slack, which is populated by our Patreon people, somebody used the Slack channel to say, crap, Steph's hurt. And so I got that before I started watching the game. And so I spent the entire time with this pit in my stomach. So the Warriors come out hot. You know what I mean? They looked really good. Durant had a defensive intensity. But I couldn't enjoy any of it because it was like swimming in a pool that you knew had a shark in it. Like, right, at some point, dude, this is going to go really poorly. So the bottom line is that Steph suffered a dislocated middle finger on his left hand. So first question is, fine? Any residual? Anything? Can we expect him to be 100% come Saturday?
Yeah, I think he's totally fine. Nothing serious at all. If you've ever had a finger dislocated, it hurts for a little while, and there might be pain for 24 to 48 hours. But luckily for the Warriors, the next game is not till Saturday. So he has a good four or so days to rest up, and he'll be totally fine and ready to go.
So I made some joke on Twitter saying, Steph, if you need a middle finger, you can certainly use mine, but I don't want to give you both because one of them is spent pointing at Houston right now. But after I made the joke, I thought of the follow-up question, and it would be this. Would you give up a body part for an actual player on your team? Because we talk about this, like, this dedication to this team, this over the top.
Would you give an ankle? Would you give your healthy ankle?
That's exactly right. Okay, so for me, it's a spectrum. Would I give Steph Curry my left middle finger, on Saturday? Sure, dude. Like, I
think I would definitely do that. I could be kind of awkward, but that's fine. Would I give him my left ankle for the better part of a season? I'm going to say no. I don't think I would. I don't think I'd be willing to hobble it out for like 5 or 6 months. So there's a limit on the spectrum of my fandom. Maxime, where are you at on this? Are you all the way, like, he blows out both ACLs. Would you give up both legs for 9 months?
I would for Steph, but the problem is I don't think I would for this Warriors team. I don't trust that they would take advantage of that. I feel like I'd be sitting on the couch for 9 months, even more pissed off than I am when they're blowing a home game to the f***ing Phoenix Suns. So I don't know. You know, that's a tricky question.
You are a complex dude, Maxime. Every time I think I'm gonna get like a real straightforward answer, like I would for Steph, but not for this team. And I'm not like, there's like a Sigmund Freud analysis that was necessary to get to the bottom.
Oh, okay.
So would you for Steph, this team, you would not?
Correct.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's interesting that you bring up Freud.
Everybody sit back for about an hour. Go ahead.
because as it turns out, you don't know this about me, but my dad blew off his left hand making homemade rockets when he was 13. So the entire time I've known him, the entire time my mom has known him, he's only had one hand.
Huh.
And he's an architect, right? And like does a bunch of drafting. I mean, he has raised a kid that is almost normal. And he's, you know, he's got a healthy life going on, right?
So this is not you. He has
the other kid. Okay, yeah. I'm way off.
Yeah, I remember. That's why I like you, and you
deep,
and I have a lot in common.
Deep
off. Right. I'm really glad they have a normal kid. That's fantastic.
No, this is. So you have some interesting perspective to bring to this losing a body part conversation.
Well, right, because I was, and actually, you know, I was the only child, right? So I was my dad's second set of hands. Right, and I mean, he got a long way with one hand. So first of all, I know it's totally possible.
Do you mind me? Was he right? Like, was it?
He was his left hand, and he was right-handed.
Okay,
so it's sort of like Steph in that, right? It's not his shooting hand; it's just the hand that helps him hold the ball. And it's the same for my dad. My dad would rest his wrist on the table to hold the paper while he drew on it with his right hand.
Huh.
And so, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's totally a spectrum. The body adapts to ridiculous amounts of. Loss of limbs, right? Yeah, adversity. So I know that it's actually quite possible to not only get by, but actually succeed and even excel with less than an entirely quote unquote normal human body.
That got a lot deeper than you were expecting.
If you had given me 1,000 guesses on what his answer would have been, 1,000 guesses on what his answer would have been, not one of them would have been, I actually have personal experience with giving up a body part to help someone I really love. Like, and so like, yeah, man, like we ventured into some serious right there, and that's amazing and optimistic, and I don't know what to do with it.
I love that we can learn about each other on this podcast.
I don't. I'm not here to learn about anything, but I guess I enjoyed that moment. I will, in fact, move us on towards another injury. And if, Maxime, you have somebody blind in your life, then I will be shocked by this as well. But the other major injury to come out of last night was James Harden, who suffered what looked to be like complete and total blindness by the end of the evening. But I'll leave it to you, Connor. He had a scratched, I guess, left eye at the hands of Draymond Green, but... Where is James Harden as far as you understand it, and will he be playing on Saturday?
I think the Rockets are also very thankful that the game's not till Saturday. From what's been reported out of Houston, when the Rockets landed back in Houston this morning, the first thing James Harden did was he went to
see an eye dog.
He saw an eye doctor. He saw an eye doctor. And apparently, even today, he was having a hard time seeing, which shows how bad it was, because I don't know if you've ever had temporary vision loss. I have, and it's rare to go more than a day without it.
When you had temporary vision loss, were you able to go repeatedly through your legs with a basketball and drive heavily to the hole without any problem, or pass phenomenally well to teammates without any issue?
I mean, you have to understand, a lot of what these basketball players do is based off instinct. I mean, they play basketball every day. But I will tell you, I was in that press conference.
Helen Keller.
I was in that press conference post game, and he was seriously struggling, especially with the lights. You felt for him.
Then again, you know, you are the media, right? I mean, how much of that, and I'm like, how much of that is an act, right? There was a the very classic Charles Barkley quote in the post game coverage where I don't remember who said it, Kenny or Shaq, was like, oh, yeah, like he was definitely clearly having a hard time. And Chuck was like, yeah, but he was only squinting on defense. And
that's okay. That's funny.
This is a completely biased take. I'll be the first to say.
Completely I thought you were the most unbiased.
Completely biased. Thing. First, let me say that just based, it's a player who's known for flopping, so it was hard for me to immediately accept that he was hurt. And when it took him 8 decades to come back from the locker room because of an eye injury, it was hard for me to accept. But two, maybe it's just me and it's my read, but his eye problem seemed to be getting worse with the score or better with the score, depending on what it was. When they were down 10, he blinked like there was acid in his eye. When they were came within 4, it looked like he was on the verge of recovery, like there was no issues at all, which just screams a disingenuous nature. You know what I mean? But as opposed to accuse him of faking the injury or flaming it up for whatever reason, I'll say this. It's a memo to my boy Peter Goober. So a voice or a name, rather, that some of us may not have heard for a while. There are, in fact, a couple of owners of the Golden State Warriors, one of which we know very well, Joe Lacob. He runs the entire show. There's a reason we talk about him far more. But the other owner is Peter Goober.
Who's actually richer.
Okay. In fact, he comes from Hollywood. He used to run Hollywood Studios. And he's in charge of all the Cirque du Soleil crap. When they announced Chase Center, Peter Goober was the guy who organized literally Cirque du Soleil, all these acrobats jumping out of construction equipment to make a big deal about it. On a more baseline level, he's also the person who's the author of the pyrotechnics before the game. If you go to a game now and you watch it, they've taken this thing to a Hollywood level. When the Warriors are announced, they turn off the lights, they've got fire blasts, they've got these weird lights that get reduced from the lowered from the ceiling and blink on and off. So this is my memo to you, Peter Goober. This is the time we need you to change the course of the NBA. Apparently, Harden is having time or a difficult time with flashing lights. I need Game 5, should there be a Game 5's opening, to be the most seizure-inducing, ridiculous display of lights you have ever seen. Give Houston a light display. Do it all. Let's get like $50,000 of anything you can put together in fireworks. If, in fact, Harden can completely see at the end of the opening introductions, Peter Goober, you failed. I need you to step up and play a role. Now, legit to ask, is that like cheating? I mean, it feels like a legitimate thing.
It's within the rules, right?
I mean, let's go to X's and O's. Why has Golden State won their first two games?
They've won their first two games because they're trying hard. Honestly, yeah. I mean, I did a story about this today. That you can actually, we're at the point now with our analytics that you can measure hustle. You know, the hustle stats are a real thing on NBA.com, and their hustle stats the first two games have been through the roof. They're getting deflections. They're getting deflections. They're getting offensive rebounds. They're setting those kind of brick wall screens that are freeing guys up for wide open looks. Obviously, Draymond's been a huge part of that. But defensively, I think they've been really impressive. The Rockets entering the postseason had the second best offensive rating ever behind this year's Warriors team. The Warriors had the best offensive rating ever. The Rockets narrowly missed that, had the second best. And so far during this series, they have an offensive rating that would rank in the bottom 9 teams in the regular season. It was on par with the Detroit Pistons, who aren't very good offensively. Wow. And that's been just a testament to what the Warriors have been doing defensively. And with the Warriors, they have all the tools to be an elite defensive team. It's just always been a matter of their effort and their how well they're locked in. And I think right now, like everything we talked about earlier, they see a challenge. I think they're a little pissed off. You guys saw how inspired they opened Game 2. I think that they were annoyed by that whole narrative of the officiating and the fact that the Rockets are going back and counting fouls from the 2017 West Finals. The Warriors were like, you know what? We're going to give you no excuses. Mm-hmm. We're just going to kick your ass.
Yep.
And props to the Rockets. The thing about the Rockets that's impressed me in the first two series is there's been no reason they should be in either of these games. Yet, for whatever reason, they're only losing by like 6-7 points.
Yep.
And that's why I think they could still be a threat in this series.
Yep, I completely agree with you. As far as why the Warriors are winning, we've made the joke and the analogy to the Princess Bride scene where the guy goes from the left hand to the right hand. We're sitting there fighting right-handed. They care. You know, I mean, they're giving them everything they have. And right now, that talent base is simply better. Something that we have said the entire time.
That's totally true. I mean, I remember the first play of the first game was this beautiful, like, side play that then led to a backdoor from Draymond. It was, like, just beautiful, wide open, the entire lane, put it up. But I gotta say, there's also, you know, a lot in the Clippers series, there was a lot of discontent around Kerr's lack of in-game adjustments. And I always felt like Kerr is of the opinion that this team is talented enough to beat a Clippers style team with just their starting five doing everything by the book. But right off of the bat for game one, you know, he inserts death lineup. It's clear he's not screwing around. And then even in game two, they did this thing, right, that Ethan Strauss wrote about bumping off. Yeah. Where, like, every single time, and this is new for game two, they weren't doing it in game one. You could see it. They were moving Steph off of the help defender who was going to, right, who's going to end up being the one that is in the pick and roll, right? So they knew who was going to be involved in the pick and roll, and they moved Steph one man further away, and so he wasn't ever going to be switched on to Harden. And I mean, that's the type of thing we know that Harden is constantly hunting that specific mismatch. He wants Curry as his primary defender, and the Warriors were consistently excellent at making sure that Steph was never switched on to Harden.
That looked like a Ron Adams specialty. Yeah. That Ron Adams is really good at finding those types of wrinkles. And he knows the defensive personnel better than anyone. And so that was definitely a Ron Adams thing. And what I think we saw in the first round was Doc Rivers is a phenomenal in-game tactician. He's great at making in-game changes. That's never been Steve's specialty.
He would tell you that.
He will tell you that. And I think he and D'Antoni are similar in that they have similar strengths. They're good at relating to their guys. They're good, very good offensively at coming up with schemes and game plans. But in terms of in-game adjustments, that's not really their forte. And I think that plays to the Warriors' benefit because they're not going to have to tweak things, especially offensively, offensively as much as they would have, you know, if they were going up against a Doc Rivers coach team.
I've come to appreciate Kerr more during these playoffs, which is a remarkably strange thing to say because most Warrior fans seem to have used these playoffs as justification to criticize him more. And here's why I appreciate him. It's a different look. So every time I've thought about coaches before, I've separated coaches from players. Here's what I mean. When I look at players, I understand they're good at some things, not good at others. If Steph doesn't have a post game, I'm not angry about that. When Shaq couldn't shoot the three, I wasn't frustrated about his inability to shoot the three. These guys were very good at very specific things. It turns out that mentally speaking, coaches are the same. We don't evaluate them that way. We expect them to be great across the board in all spectrums, but of course they're good at some things and not good at others.
I mean, I'm sure you're better at certain aspects of your job than
I'm terrible at all of them. Like, all of them, but I appreciate
like,
you
like for
that.
Me, like I'm like a feature writer. I'm not as good at like the super in-depth X's and O's stories.
If
like,
I'm going to give myself like, credit, I can narrate awkward moments. I'm really good at that. But most other things I can't get my way through. But what this playoffs has helped me recognize both credit and not. Let's start with not. Kerr's not at in-game adjustments. He can't. He's not good at them. That is not his skill set. That is not something we can expect him to be good at because he would tell you he's not good at it. But he is phenomenally good at developing a system. He's great in the locker room. He can make adjustments at halftime. He's good during timeouts. There's all these other upsides. And we are seeing both sides of that coin during this year. And the biggest credit I can give him and the biggest distinction between he and somebody like Mark Jackson is that he would agree with what I'm telling you. He can make this distinction and recognize, to quote you what you just told us, he's not that good at in-game adjustments. You know what he did? He brought in Ron Adams, who can help him with these kind of things. He brought in Mike Brown. He brought in Gentry. Like
Mike Brown is in charge of the rotation. The substitution pattern.
There you go.
He's really good at thinking on the fly. He's got his little substitution sheets and all that. He's a great mathematician.
Do you know how secure you have to be with yourself in order to say, listen, this is delegate. What I'm not good at?
To delegate.
That's what good leadership is. That is leadership, right?
For sure. I mean, the best presidents, they're not great at everything. That's why there are cabinets, right? It's their job to go out there and convince people that their policies, which is a reflection of everything that their cabinet is doing, is a good idea. That's the job.
And part of being good at the job is empowering people and hiring people who are good and putting them in roles that accentuate their talents.
This is a compliment by way of a criticism, which is not something you hear very frequently. Steve Kerr is shitty at in-game adjustments, is phenomenal at other portions, and recognizes its importance and has delegated that thing to other things, which is just another cry to everybody out there who is currently not appreciating a coach who has worn titles every single year except for one in his entire career. Let me ask you this, all right? After game one, the Rockets came out and issued a report to the league. Supposedly, they didn't want everyone else to find out, but the media found out about it immediately. And in that report, they supposedly explained, and I don't know if it was a video or a piece of paper. I'm not sure what the hell it was. But in it, they explained that through both game one and game seven of last year's Western Conference Finals, the Rockets were cost 81 points because the referees were missing calls. All right. And it went so far as to point out during game one, the Rockets said that James Harden should have been called for an offensive foul. Wasn't. The ball goes the other way and Steph hits a three. So those threes should have been taken off the board. All right. But I digress. My question to you is this. The team that puts in that report to the league, is that a super savvy, smart team? You know what I mean? They just understand who this is. They understand how to play the media, they understand how to create a narrative, and they're getting an advantage for their team, or is it a desperate move?
I actually don't think the actual act of reviewing film and having those types of reports is that unique. I think a lot of teams do that. I think the fact that it went public the way it did, the timing of it was super weird. D'Antoni, a lot of people are mad at D'Antoni over this, and D'Antoni didn't do those reports. It was Daryl Morey and his people. And anyone who knows Daryl Morey knows that he's a very obsessive person, and he's very obsessive about the Warriors. So it does not surprise me at all that he would do that. And I'm not saying he leaked it, but you know, maybe put the wheels in motion for that to be leaked.
I'll say he leaked it. Allegedly, I don't know. I mean, how would I know he leaked it?
But it shows a lack of awareness about your opponent because. You should know that the last thing you want to do is piss off the Warriors.
You mean wake a sleeping dog?
Yeah. Because all the Warriors need to kick your ass is to be motivated. And they were already motivated, and now they're super motivated because you made the entire narrative for 2 days about the officiating and the calls you didn't get.
I absolutely. And I will also say that the national media clearly took the Warriors' side in this. I mean, there was sort of universal criticism of this approach, and to the point that it kind of seemed like Houston came out with the tail between their legs in game two. There was no complaints about any foul calls across the entire thing. I don't think they got what they wanted at all. And in fact, I think what they ended up doing was getting Draymond to kind of chill out a little bit too. There were a couple of calls where you saw him just kind of walk to the bench and just chill for a second. That played to our advantage.
I'm generally speaking above math jokes. I don't like to use math or multiplication or any form of math as a joke, but it did strike me that 27 times 3 is 81, and I find that to be so remarkably entertaining. That and for those who don't remember, they missed 27 threes at the end of that game 7, so it is appropriate to me that that ended up being the point total. You know, too bad for them.
Wow. You just blew my mind.
Boom. That's what I come with, math revelations.
But check out the Warriors Huddle conspiracy YouTube channel.
Also known as Math is Fun. You can go ahead and check that out. But let me use it as a transition to this. What would you guys grade the officiating so far in this Houston series? I'll go first. I'm going to give it an A. Here's why. After that game one, all of this stuff happened, right? This report was issued. We started questioning landing space and what should be allowed. And it was...
I wrote more about officiating in that 2 day span than I had like all season.
Okay. And so the danger was, what I was expecting was, is that the officials were going to be the story of game two. So much so, by the way, that Houston considered it some kind of a huge advantage that Scott Foster was coming to ref. Some kind of disadvantage to them.
That was it. I've never seen the fact that a referee was assigned a game be such a huge story.
Dude, Warrior fans everywhere can attest, we hate Scott Foster.
I know. He was not actually, like our best friend. I went on a Houston radio show the morning of the game, and they said, you know, Rockets fans hate Scott Foster. Is there a referee that Warriors fans hate? I said, Scott Foster,
good for you. You know, I got a call from that Houston radio station, but I just couldn't make it that day. It's weird. I was going to make it, but I was going to join you. Anyways, why I'd give them an A, if we pick up the narrative, is despite that, the officials were remarkably good in game two. They were not the story. In fact, they went out of their way to let these guys play. And for that reason alone, I give them an A. How do you guys interpret the officiating? It's been a big story. Good, bad? What do you think?
I also give him an A. I think that the no calls on that landing zone foul, when it's that ambiguous, takes a lot of guts, because they know that it's different from how you do it in the regular, from how it's been called in the regular season. And they knew that there was going to be a huge amount of backlash, and that was very intentional. I mean, there were six or seven should have, for what Harden was expecting, for what the Rockets were expecting, to have been calls. And the fact that they didn't call it meant that it was premeditated, and that takes like a lot of guts.
Yeah, honestly, I'm sure they did a lot of research entering this series, and I give them props for that, because the reality is the Rockets were upset because they weren't getting the calls they got in the regular season.
Of course, dude.
That's why Harden said, I just want a fair chance, because he's used to getting those calls. But the reality is, he didn't deserve to get those calls. And there was maybe one closeout, the Clay closeout, that was a bad call, that should have been a foul. But everyone's talking about that one call. Yep. Dude, I mean, over the course of the game, you're going to miss some calls. 100%. Like, that doesn't, no one's perfect. I don't think that's that big a deal. And I thought in game two, they were great. And you look at the foul totals from both games, they're very even.
There's a fable, there's a fairy tale that all of us are remarkably familiar with that applies to this immediately. It's called The Boy Who Cried Wolf. Mm-hmm. We understand what the hell happened. Harden flailed his hands and his beard and all of his bullshit for 82 games. For 82 games he did. And they got calls for 82 games. And then he went out and he did the exact same crap in a real series with the world watching. And we had already figured out that they weren't false. So at that point, he cried wolf and nobody answered. That's what happens. We learn this at 5. You know what I mean? Like, this is part of the show. But I digress. Let me follow it up with this. What adjustments do you expect? All right, so the Warriors are up 2-0. It feels phenomenal, but the other side of that coin is, this is what should have happened. We protected home court. Now we go back to them. They are expected to win the next two. If you're D'Antoni, if you're a Houston fan, what adjustments? What do you think we'll see?
They need to find some sort of way to get Capella involved. And I don't know what an easy solution is, because the reality is, he's just a horrible matchup against Draymond. And so do you maybe try to stagger his minutes so that they can catch him when Draymond's not on the court or something? I don't know. Maybe you bring him off the bench. But they need to figure something out, because there's no chance of them winning this series if Capella's as much of a non-factor as he's been in the first two games.
I totally agree, and it's clearly been a point of the Warriors to eliminate the lob threat to Capella. I mean, there was like one alley-oop.
And the thing that about Capella is, that's really all he has.
Right.
He's a phenomenal lob threat, but he's very one-dimensional. The Warriors are smart enough where if you're one-dimensional, they'll figure out how to negate that one dimension.
I don't know if they're looking for big changes, because they, just like you've already said, they've been in every single game. Some of that is Warriors turnovers at inopportune moments, but it's not like they've been getting blown out, so I can see them wanting to stick to their game plan. But I will dovetail this into another question I was going to ask anyways. What's the thing that surprises you most? It's what you guys have already talked about, but I'll add another component to it. One is Capella's lack. I don't know where the hell he's at. But the other thing I don't understand, where the hell is Kenneth Faried? Kenneth Faried has destroyed Warriors since he was in Denver. I understand why you'd go with Capella first. Of course you would. He's their starter and their star. But
Why would you go with the corpse of Nene Hilario before you gave
Nene should not be playing at all?
So what's happening? At all. I hope and trust that Mike D does not listen to this podcast. I can't imagine he would take any suggestions from it. But the thing that has surprised me and a change that I would suggest for Houston is where if Kenneth Faried, because he fits in to exactly what Houston needs.
He's like a very, very, very poor man's Montrezl Harrell.
So what the hell is going on? Why, I mean, can you think of any reason why he would not be prominently involved in this series?
DeMarcus Cousins. I think we saw how interesting the matchup between Cousins and Faried was over the two games that Cousins was in when we played Rockets in the regular season. And I would imagine that was something they were like, listen, if the Warriors are going to start the death lineup, we need to go smaller, we need to go lighter. They don't have a traditional center in their starting rotation, so we don't need to implement him as much. And I mean, even Kevon Looney, basically, like, I would see Bogut being more of...
You mean, so if Boogie was healthy and playing, they would be going more of their traditional five lineup, so we'd see more of Faried. But you'd think that Faried would also fit into the transitional lineup. He's a guy who should theoretically be able to guard more positions than, for example, again, Nene Hilario.
No, listen, I'm right there with you in that I find it somewhat baffling. So that's the first thing that came to mind, but I do think it is confusing. And just to say, this is sort of a win-win. Mike D'Antoni, if you are listening, come on the pod, man.
Absolutely. Also, go f*** yourself, Mike D. No, actually, come on the pod. I take that back. I take that back as fast as I possibly could.
Let me say one thing about adjustments. You know one thing that's a really bad sign for the Rockets right now? The fact that the Warriors are shooting so few three-pointers, and the few three-pointers that they're shooting, they're not hitting, and they're still up 2-0. Like, the Rockets are executing their game plan. They wanted to get them off the line and shooting mid-range.
Yep.
But the Warriors are hitting the mid-range at such a high rate.
I'm going to break this up. Let's get away from X's and O's. I'm going to have you reassume your position as the Honorable Letourneau. I'm sure you remember this, Maxime, but we'd occasionally have Connor sit in and would provide rulings from the bench.
Oh, my God.
This one's going to be fast. The last one we did
was
awful.
The worst experience... I've ever had.
I'm not sure we have to tell the audience. I'm not sure we have to tell the audience that we did have a bad one.
I was
one.
So mad at you that night. I was in New York. Myself. I was with my best friend. We were going out. Took time out of my night to go do that for you.
I appreciate that. Well, thank God we relived that. But we are now moving forward immediately. This is going to be a very fast version for those in the audience who haven't heard it. I'm going to give Connor a question. He's going to tell us whether or not what happened was socially acceptable, questionable, or not acceptable at all. Maxime, I'm happy to tell you that this involves you. So the story goes, we go all the way back to the Clipper series. And Maxime and I, in addition to working with one another, become friends. I love having him. And I invited him over to a game here to watch. And he came and we really enjoyed it. But before he showed up, I don't remember. Do you remember which Clipper game it was?
Nope.
That portion doesn't necessarily matter. But we were figuring out logistics, what time to show up. And he shoots me a text saying, look, I live about 10 minutes away from you, which is true. Would you come and pick me up? Right? So he ultimately got his own way here. I didn't, in fact, go and pick him up. But my question to you, in an era of Uber and Lyft and like all these other things, dude, socially acceptable to ask for a ride to the person's house or not at all?
It's not socially acceptable. I'm sorry. I like you, but I wouldn't do that. The thing is, they're being nice by inviting you to their house, maybe making you food, rolling out the red carpet for you. But like, and you're not poor, man. Like,
poor is like $5, dude. It's like $5.
Worst comes to worst, Uber it, and also that way you don't you can.
That's what I did.
Yes, no, but you don't ask. Exactly. You no, just
he
do
knew
it.
He listen, knew the options.
Okay, just because you f***ers don't care about the environment, I'm over here trying to keep less cars on the road. Okay,
you're not going to keep that Uber driver off the road regardless.
That's what I'm saying. And I wasn't going to come pick you up in a horse and a buggy. You still would have been in a car.
Yeah, that's two cars instead of one.
No, it is not.
The guy is still going to go pick someone up.
Exactly. The Uber driver is still somewhere driving. You wanted to increase the emissions in the air. So not only did you hate my free time, you hated the environment, which seems important to point out. Another random question, but it is equally irrelevant, so it sticks here. I went to game one, went with a wife, had a great time, and was hell-bent on being too loud. Got drunk before we went there, even though it was a 12:30 game.
Have you seen anyone wearing a Warriors huddle?
No, I didn't, even though I would have offered. So, and the reason I imagine you're asking is I tweeted out, and I will stick by it now. Let me go public. If I ever see anybody, either at the game or on the street, I'll go ahead and say it, in a Warriors huddle,
t-shirt, hoodie, anywhere, anything, drinks on me, and notice the S on the word drinks, drinks on me. And if, for example, you want to get out there and get a shirt and put yourself in this pseudo lottery, go to TeePublic, T-E-E, public.com and look up Warriors.
They're dope shirts.
They are. They're nice. To the hoodies,
I could actually wear anything that said Warriors on it.
They're nice. But I digress. So I go to the game. I want to get hammered at the game, and am somewhat successful. And while I'm sitting there screaming my balls off, my wife on at least two occasions leans over and says, "You are scaring those children," and points out to two kids who, when I make eye contact with, immediately shield their eyes because they are, in fact, afraid of me because of how long I've been screaming. So my question to you is this. I didn't cuss. Like, I, you know, there wasn't any F-bombs. Like, I kept it. Like, I understood. I saw those kids. I kept it within, like, the realm of appropriateness, I thought. So, at a playoff game, when is loud too loud? Is there a too loud in that circumstance? Do you have to edit yourself? Should children be around as far as sound quality is concerned?
I mean, I think you can be completely abrasively loud in moments that make sense to be abrasively loud, you know? But you can't be that guy when everyone else is being quiet on a dead ball, freaking out for no reason.
Well, this is during the Warriors Girl performance. So, like, that makes sense there. Like, I mean, I really liked the routine they put together. You know what I mean? Like, it was what it was. I was dancing along with it. What do you think, man? Can I be too loud?
I think you're not loud enough. What, like, what is with these lulls, you know? I want wall-to-wall screaming with all 70,000 people in attendance.
I was a little disappointed.
70,000? How many people you think fit into Oracle Arena?
19,596. You can let him get away with that. You can immediately get away with that. Right. I know. I'm not going to give you that type of specificity and be off. I was also a little disappointed you didn't ask me for a ride to the game. I was waiting for that text, but it just didn't come, which is super scandalous. Too soon for that.
I was a little disappointed that you didn't offer me a ticket to the game. So, because if you did, I would have 100% been like, let's save the environment and carpool.
To be fair, that's why I didn't. Is I wanted to save the environment by not inviting you to the game, which has the same connection to the environment.
I had an off day earlier this season, and we were texting, and I was like, hey, I actually wouldn't mind going and just seeing the game from a different vantage point. He's like, I can't take you. I'm like, thanks, man.
He could have taken you.
I mean, he just didn't want to. He had a ticket.
He's just trying to save the environment.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm still sitting here. I feel like you guys are having a conversation about me while I'm not sitting right here. Also, I'm married. So it is what it is. Best thing I've ever done, make my wife a Warriors fan. Worst thing I've ever done, make my wife a Warriors fan. It is what it is. Let's not jump down that rabbit hole. Instead, let me ask this. Have you guys ever rooted, and this is a real question, for a player who is going through the same type of dominant stretch that Kevin Durant is currently going through? Like, they've happened, right? People have had this kind of success, obviously, on a sporting floor, but as a personal experience, you know, like when Jordan was doing what he was doing, I wasn't a Chicago fan. You know, when all these other, when Brady has done what he's done with a football, I hate the Patriots. So yep. For me, I've never had this, not this. Have you guys, is there anything comparable?
I mean, nothing for me. Actually, Brady's a really good example. My buddy growing up was like a fan of all things Boston, even though we were growing up in the Bay Area. And I just hated him constantly because he had all of this success across like 12,000 exactly different right. sports. And I'm like, this is bullshit. Yeah, like,
good looking.
Meanwhile, like, I went to Cal, which is like the most notoriously terrible college for everything, you know, that actually matters, right? So I'm like, listen, I have a history of repping teams that lose consistently. No, I've never seen anything. I have no idea what to do. I'm like, props, he's going to miss King the Jones next one. Because
if it makes you feel any better, Cal told me to go myself twice, so yeah, at least you got in. Yeah.
Only twice, because they told me that like 10 times a year.
You were still there, man. I mean, goddamn.
You got in.
Two last questions. Let me start here. What's the most satisfying moment, as a Warriors fan at least, for the playoffs so far? I have some suggestions, but feel free to go off script. Here are my suggestions. One, Patrick Beverley sobbing after they lost. Remarkably satisfying. Two, the Steph Curry dagger over the corpse of Nene Hilario in game one. And finally, three, Chris Paul getting ejected at the end of game one. For me, and it's weird, this shouldn't be true, but for me, it was Pat Beverly crying. Like, really, it's just the sign of a guy having nothing but passion and, like, really allowing his emotions to pour out after a phenomenally well-played series. But I took it as a, fuck you, Patrick Beverly, I hated you for more than a week, and I'm glad to see you cry. So it was satisfying for me. What do you guys think?
I mean, I'm not a Warriors fan.
Yeah, I said it wrong. I said it wrong.
So I'll look at it from the prism of, you know, what was the most satisfying experience for the Warriors.
There you go. Okay.
I think, honestly, it has to be just game six, the way they came out and stomped them in that second half against the Clippers. Because it was a moment where they were basically just saying, you know what? We're better than you. And I know we gave you a little hope, but we're better than you. And kind of building off that, I think the beginning of game two of the second round, after everything they had heard about all the officiating coming out and just kind of sticking it to them right away. And then, you know, to compound that, James Harden getting injured pretty early in that game. It was just kind of like, yo, we're the Warriors, okay?
That a way to embrace the feel of this show. Connor, nicely played.
Have you guys heard the story about the kid that strangled the mountain lion to death?
Of course.
Okay.
No, I have not heard that story.
Great.
No.
This happened recently.
Have you heard the story?
I have not.
Yeah, okay, whatever. The story.
Is that a new thing?
Or yeah, it's relatively new. Some
where was it?
I don't know. It was like somewhere in like, I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is that if I strangle the mountain lion, but it like ripped my arm off, I'm not going to be like, that was dope. I killed this mountain lion. No, I'm down an arm. Game six, I don't care how tight they wrecked the dudes in the second half. Like, that wasn't satisfying. It was like, this should have been a sweep. What the fuck are you guys doing? So as far as I'm concerned, the Chris Paul ejection was so satisfying because that guy pisses me off to no end.
I like angry Maxine.
Does he piss you off more than James Harden?
No.
Okay. Most hateable Rocket.
James Harden.
By far?
Yeah. Maybe if Chris Paul had a beard like that, it might be
the most hateable player in the NBA.
This 100%. Series, I'm going to disagree with you guys. This series, Chris Paul has catapulted himself above James Harden. Here's why, and it's subjective, right? Like, I'm not expecting you guys to agree with me, but his unique and unjustifiable sense of entitlement drives me insane. That little dance he did when Harden finally got a foul at the three-point line, the shimmy he did with Steph after he hit the three, the smile he did to Kerr and then changed his face, all of these petulant displays of unfounded power, I am done with. Chris Paul, if you'd won a championship, if you won an MVP, if you won a finals MVP, if you put together the kind of resume that allows you to do these things, great, man, good for you. Do them. You can be an asshole. It's justified. You have not. The most significant thing you have done for NBA history is get hurt last year during the Western Conference Finals. So let's just go ahead and accept that and stop having demonstrative displays of power you do not have. I hate him more than I hate James Harden. Just is what it is.
This series, I totally agree with you.
I practiced that rant, and I was afraid I was going to rush it. It felt like
super tight. Incredibly well paced. Yeah, well, okay, yeah, no, you no, really, you guys really nailed it.
That was like a sports talk radio.
That's what I was looking for.
Perfectly timed,
right? Okay, thanks a lot. Man, I really appreciate that. All right, go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
Yeah. At this point, what do I have to say? The thing is that Chris Paul has not had success really based on his antics. I mean, when he was on the Clippers with Griffin and, there was just like not really, like they just didn't get anywhere, right? They pissed us off, but like in terms of the national NBA, there was not any success based on, you know, so like he was regarded as an excellent point guard, but nothing really more, right? Whereas James Harden is an MVP. He is somebody that has seen the fruits of ridiculous behavior pay off.
The last time I saw somebody petulantly celebrate what a umpire or ref had done was Barry Bonds. Mm. When Barry Bonds took a strike that he thought was a ball and a ref called it, he would look at the ball and condescendingly say, good call. There's a reason he could do that. He was the greatest person to have ever touched a bat and to hit a baseball in the history of mankind. You have to earn that crap. He has not. All right. Let's jump into one of our brand new segments this year, but still one that I genuinely enjoy doing. It's the look around the league for this. We turn to Marcus, even though he is not in the room. He's still been working hard out there. And what he's done is collected three stories from around the league. He's going to run all three of them by Maxime, Connor, and I. We're going to vote on which one we want to talk about and then dive in. MT, what do you got?
All right, three thrilling stories again. You know how it is, especially during playoff time when not a lot of teams are active. So give you the three best ones. One, Vince Carter. He has officially announced that he's coming back for his 22nd season. He is 42 years old. That is a dinosaur. I can't believe he's still playing. So we could talk about him and
not that old.
Kind of what was going on.
Not that old. And let the record reflect that Connor, for no reason, pointed at me. I'd also like the record reflect that I am not, in fact, 42 years
old.
You're
41. Right?
I'm not 41 either. 40. Both of those numbers are absolutely wrong, and I don't need your stupid condescending points. I'm just going to say that. So this is your fault, MT, for giving us one of your terrible and not thrilling stories. What are your other two?
The second one is Dwayne Wade was talking recently and admitted that he talked to LeBron during the offseason before he joined Miami, and they were just discussing which place they wanted to play at, and Chicago was actually at the top of their list, but Chicago didn't have enough money to afford both of them and Chris Bosh. But they were really excited about playing with Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Lou Alden, etc. So we can talk a little bit about that. There are some other teams that they mentioned, including the Knicks. And third, and the final story, it's coming out that the Brooklyn Nets are a place that Tobias Harris, Kawhi Leonard, and Kevin Durant will consider signing in the offseason.
Is this coming out from Marcus Taylor of the Warriors Huddle? Where is this rumor coming from? I have not heard this.
It's from Bleacher Report. Sean Marks is doing his thing over there as the GM. So,
do you know? Was it Rick Bucher? Do you know who wrote it?
I don't remember who wrote it. I could look it up. Give you that name. But so
that story entertains me. But the
I think either Vince Carter or Brooklyn.
I'm going to go the middle story. I immediately disagree, only because so that last story is definitely the most entertaining. But I feel like the BR is a. about as legitimate as the National Enquirer. I just don't believe most of the stuff that comes out.
Well, that's why I asked who wrote it, because it depends who wrote it.
Why? But, who would you?
Because there's some people from BR who I think are credible.
All right. And is this one of those people? Do we know?
Rick Bucher, I think, is pretty well sourced. I think that we should talk about Brooklyn just because it's the most relevant to our audience. I think people, any Kevin Durant rumor, people want to know about.
You've shamed me into it, unfortunately enough.
I can give you the name. It is Scott, sorry if I butcher your last name, Polisek.
Oh, please tell me that you have no respect for him.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, yes. Just a giant hip check to you, Scott. Hopefully you don't listen to the actual podcast. Then I'm going to stick with my original thing. I want to talk about that middle story because I love the idea of this tampering rule continuing to be out there, even though players are now obviously and blatantly violating it, which means, Maxime, you can either make this a three-way tie, which would be terrible radio, or you can pick which one of these two stories we jump into.
Okay, couple of things that I'd like to say. First of all, Noah from the Patreon crew was just ribbing me for posting a Bleacher Report article into the Slack channel, so shout out to Noah. And now that Connor's also wrecking the credibility of that not quite institution, I guess, I don't know how I feel. And then also, Scott Polacek, 37 minutes ago, Cardinals didn't draft Kyler Murray number one, to quote Ride the Pine. 2 hours ago, James Dolan sued by MSG.
3 hours ago, he posted a picture of the Loch Ness Monster close. Playing basketball for the Knicks.
Kentucky Derby. So I don't really think this dude is deep in
it's probably
NBA
a situation
lore.
Where he's like, you know what? Brooklyn Nets are, they're building something. They could probably be good. People would probably want to go there. I don't really have any sourcing.
Just to avoid the surefire slander lawsuit that is speeding its way towards this podcast, Scott, I have nothing but respect for your work, and I'm sure that Brooklyn is an absolutely phenomenal landing spot for all three of those young gentlemen. Maxime, what's your pick?
Look, I'm voting for the Brooklyn story. I think that's the most interesting.
After shithousing the guy,
about it? I just needed to make sure that everybody understood that I'm an unbiased representation of what's happening.
I think it's an interesting story regardless of how well-sourced it is, because I've honestly been saying for a couple months now. I don't understand why the Nets aren't more of a aren't in the conversation more, because they have the money. They're also in New York. They don't have all the baggage that goes with the Knicks. They don't have a horrible ownership. Yep. They have some really nice young pieces. They have great leadership in Sean Marks. And they exceeded expectations this year. I think that the Nets are the type of team where someone like Kevin Durant could go there this summer and make them a legitimate contender right away, without even necessarily having a Kyrie with him. And I and also you're playing in a phenomenal arena in Barclays, which is probably my favorite arena in the NBA. I think it makes a lot of sense. And honestly, I don't know why they haven't gotten more chatter.
Well, I think one of the things to consider is they would have to renounce or give up the rights to D'Angelo Russell in order to make that work from a cap perspective.
To even have one max slot?
Yeah, to get both of them. To be able to get two max slots, they would have to give up Russell, which, you know, I mean, I think you do that, obviously, if it's KD or Kawhi, but, you know, Caris LeVert is there. He and KD are supposedly close. So I think there's a lot of things working, and you would probably give up D'Angelo in a heartbeat if it means.
Of course players. They would. But from my perspective, what's important about this story, what's entertaining about this story, isn't the makeup of the Brooklyn Nets and what they'd have to do to make sure that happens. I don't give a shit what happens with Brooklyn, right? But I will say, first to piggyback to what Connor's saying, what I could see being alluring about Brooklyn is has the upsides of New York, of the Knicks, because it is basically in New
also
York.
Also a franchise that hasn't won anything.
Okay, there you go. And it doesn't have the downsides. It doesn't have the Dolanese. You know, it doesn't have all the problems that would come with a franchise that has run that poorly. But what I like about this story is that it allows me to piggyback into a topic we have spent far too much time on. Where the hell is Durant going? And the reason I like it is because I kind of have a new perspective on it that I wouldn't mind boring you guys with. So the entire year, the way we've looked at this is through professional logic. What does professional logic suggest this guy is going to do? And it suggests he stays here. He's got the most money here. He's got the best chance at a championship here. He has the best teammates here. All logic points towards one destination. And so that's no longer the read for me. If he leaves here, it's because of personal rationale. Whatever that is, we'll never know it. He may not even know it yet. So if it's something like that, if it's fickle, if it's decision-making, then I really don't think it to think about it now is pointless, because he still is going to have, hopefully, another 2 months of nothing but remarkably positive basketball experience here that could immediately help him change his mind. You know, so if what we want to do is bank on what a fickle Kevin Durant will do, I don't think we will know until he's gone through these next couple of months, be it Brooklyn, be it wherever else Scott P. thinks he may want to go. You know, that's where I've come to on this. And MT, so I happen to know that you lived in Chicago. I know we're not allowed to talk about this story because the other two people in this room are too stupid to vote for it. But had you, if you had been in Chicago.
I think you really wanted to talk about that story.
If you had been in Chicago and had heard this rumor. Let me start that over. If it had actually happened, if they had built this super team in Chicago while you lived there, would you have become a Bulls fan?
No, I was always a Warriors fan. I mean, I would wear Warriors gear to the Bulls games. And my brother worked, you know, essentially for the Bulls selling games. So I always represented, but they would have been my second favorite team. I mean, it's hard not to root for a team that has that many all-stars and is playing that well, but that it was always interesting in that arena. Like, it's a big arena and it's just quiet. Like, even when the Bulls were really good, the energy in it was always a little funny.
United's one of my least favorite arenas.
I've never tried to visit there.
It's weird.
In related news, we are going to rename this podcast Marcus's Stupid Perfect Traits. Every time I throw you a question, it's like, oh no, of course I would remain loyal and I don't have any jealousy to my brother and all the other stupid lack of neurosis.
You know what? I actually, now that I think about it some more and hear that context, I think about where Miami is now and where Chicago is.
No, you're not allowed to talk about this story. You voted against it. Nobody wants to hear what your opinion is. You forced us into a Kevin Durant contest.
I want to actually say that I do think it's pretty interesting that Miami has managed to still be a pretty interesting consequential franchise post LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, that's whereas the Bulls of Eric Spoelstra. Exactly. And the Bulls have been a total joke. And so I just think it's really interesting, you know, if we're talking about the context of KD going to the Knicks versus the Nets and what that could mean for putting a team around him that is a title contender. I mean, you know, I think it's a very interesting parallel to what could have happened if LeBron and D-Wade went to the Bulls. And, you know, maybe they wouldn't have been as successful. So maybe they actually made the right choice.
We're getting down a tangent here, but the Heat have a less talented roster than the Bulls. You can make an argument that the Heat have the least talented roster in the NBA.
For sure. Markkanen is a boss.
They were in the running for a playoff seed until the last couple days of the season.
Right, yeah.
I'm sorry, are we going through a parallel universe where we figure out what could have happened on different teams? Who cares about this at all?
I will add one thing. I think you hit it on the head, Brent. Like, we don't want to speculate as to, you know, like, we want to enjoy KD as he's playing here. Where he goes is where he goes. Hopefully he stays. But the anti-tampering rules, like the fact that D-Wade is retired now, he just came out and was just like, he said it so nonchalantly that he was just like, yeah, Bron called and his agent was like, we want to talk about Miami. And Bron was like, where's your head at? And he was like, I want to win. He's like, let's go to Miami. Well, what about Chicago? How about the Knicks? And, you know, like those conversations happening and them admitting it just means that they're happening way more frequently and they will continue to happen. Oh. So I think,
am I the subject of a prank?
This run,
are you guys pranking me right now? Is that what's happening? This is the conversation I wanted to have. We waste 30 minutes shitting Durant for who knows why. And then we round into this when I'm desperately trying to talk about the Warriors. I swear to God, I'm being pranked right now. Yeah, go ahead, Connor. Apparently I cut you off during this prank session.
No, we're good. I'm sorry, Bram. I can see you. You're like, your face is red. You're about to like stroke out, right?
I'm not sure what's going on. This episode opened up with you pointing out that I was apparently too old to play basketball anymore, and it wasn't a story about me either. So
that's not the only reason.
But yeah, thank you, Connor. Thank God we got there. Jesus Christ. I will say this about the tampering, and then let's get the hell out of this segment. More than anything, I just want this moment to end. The thing that bothers me about the tampering, I understand why you need it. Because if NBA superstars decide that they want to play with one another, and why wouldn't they? You're going to start having all the top-heavy lack of competition problems the NBA is facing right now. So I get why they have them. But I also don't understand why you would have them if you refuse to enforce them in any way, shape, or form. You know, I mean, people are literally and blatantly talking about them out loud. It doesn't sound that there's going to be any repercussions. So either try to enforce these rules or get rid of them. This middle ground doesn't make any sense to me.
Go Warriors.
Where was that 15 minutes ago? Last question. Yeah. Who wins this series and in how many games? Connor, what do you got?
The Warriors, obviously. The Warriors win. And honestly, I think there's a chance they can sweep, but I'm going to say 5 games. They win in 5 games. I think the Rockets still won in Houston. But I just feel like the Warriors are super motivated and inspired right now, and they want to make quick work of the Rockets to send a message to the league.
Let's call this a reverse jinx. Warriors in 6. I think they're going to get comfortable. I think they're going to win 1 in Houston. I think Houston wins 1. Then I think they come back and win game 5. And then we close it out in 6.
That's pretty interesting. Thank you for doing that reverse jinx so I can be real content in agreeing completely with Connor. I really do think that the way they're behaving right now, they could sweep. But, I want to recognize that Houston is an excellent NBA franchise. Yep. And I totally see them being able to pull off 1 at home. No worries. But more than anything, Peter Guber heard this and is telling the team to tank 1 game so that he can mess with James Harden in game 5. So, Warriors in 5.
Guber, I expect you to be shining the bat signal in Harden's face. I don't care like what props you need to bring back. There better be seizure-inducing pyrotechnics before our next home game with that in mind, because that'll draw a close to the longest podcast in the history of podcasting, I believe. Huge fun, you guys. True every week, certainly. True this week, before we get to any of our specifics, far more importantly, Connor, love you, always love you. I'm not alone. Where can we find you, man? Other people out there want to get your work.
Follow me on Twitter @con_cron. I tweet out everything I write. You can also find my work at sfchronicle.com. I also have my own podcast Warriors awkward. I had an interesting podcast that came out this morning on fashion, how the Warriors have become fashion moguls. I talked to our fashion writer who follows the Warriors imprint on the fashion industry, and it was a unique podcast that I enjoyed doing. So give that a listen.
I will absolutely check that out for us. You know where the hell to hit us just in case. Our Twitter account at Warriors Huddle, our Gmail account at warriorshuddle@gmail.com, either of which can be used to give us any criticism, any praise, anything. If you want to reach out to Maxime and let him know that you'd give him a ride anywhere you want, Maxime, where can they hit you?
Nowhere.
At goyourself.com.
You don't have a Twitter?
Go Warriors. And hopefully, we'll see you next week.
Good, good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.